Thank you guys for being here. I hope you've had a wonderful, wonderful week. I hope that you have been encouraged. I hope that you have been inspired as you are seeking to do what you feel God has called you to do. I know it's a challenge. Fundraising is always a challenge. And having done it now for 15 years, I know the challenges of the up and the down. And having been a pastor for 28 years, I also know that what that's like. I know what it's like to try to get for someone to try to get with you because of your schedule. And I also know what it's like to have to hear a presentation knowing from day one I'm not going. I am not giving. I'm not going to be involved, but trying to be nice. Give you time. Let you say whatever you want to say. But I know from the time you walk in my office that I ain't buying. So I just know these things, and I know that that poses some difficulty for you. So actually what I wanted to do today when I was asked if I would want to come and share, I try to think of now how can I really help these men who I know have a Herculean task to try to develop an effective ministry to men in your region. And if you were dealing with any other entity, I wouldn't be as mindful of you, but dealing with churches and the fact that you're dealing across all denominational lines, all kinds of flavors, wow. Just the challenge of that, I know, is great. So I wanted to hopefully give you a couple of key insights about how to approach pastors. They are the gatekeepers for these churches. You've got to go in there. And you've got to try to sell this guy on ministry to men. And that is a challenge in and of itself, and could even be an even greater challenge if he had any exposure to it in the last 15 years. Because more than likely, his exposure to it over the last 15 years has not been good. He had a bunch of folk get excited. They're getting ready to blow the top off the world. And then all of a sudden, 5 months later, he can't find a hide nor hint nor hair of it. So he's not too happy about this thing called men's ministry, particularly once they all got excited and told him, Pastor, why ain't, which are the two worst words every pastor hates to hear. Pastor, why ain't we doing so-and-so? Why ain't we doing, oh, God. Really? Yeah, you got to get on ball. So let's talk a little bit about that. First thing I wanted to try to do was try to set this in context. Now, I know most of you men out there do a lot of this whining. Because I know that you're trying to get people to do that. Now, you absolutely are totally convinced that men, a ministry to men is the most essential thing that church should be doing. I mean, you put money in youth ministry, you put money in the women's ministry, you put money in the buildings, but there's no money going into men's ministry, which you are absolutely convinced is the most essential ministry a church should be doing. And I, right off the bat, I'm going to tell you, I think it is a damnable curse of the devil that we started trying to reach some father's children without reaching the daddy. I mean, but just think about how many millions of dollars the church has spent trying to reach children. No concern for the daddy. As if just winning the kids is going to be good enough. Well, it's only because we're not sociologists that we won't go back and look at the fruit of 20 years of labor in this way. But anyway, I'm reminded of the great Vince Lombardi. Gentlemen, this is a football. Now, I'm told that he would do that every year at the beginning of the year because Lombardi believed in putting the emphasis where it belonged. And the emphasis belonged on the fundamentals. If you don't do the fundamentals, boys, we're not going to win. If you're not paying attention to blocking and tackling at the fundamental level, he did not believe that they were going to be a great football team. And so he'd hold up that football and say, boys, let's start at the beginning. This is a football. Well, that's kind of how I feel about this whole idea of raising money going into dealing with pastors. If you don't know who you're dealing with and you haven't done your homework, I guarantee you, you're not going to have success. Now, let me show you what I mean when I say homework. Most of you have probably seen this because you guys have taken the No Man Left Behind. And they go through this and they show you all these things about men in the average kind of local church. You know, men will have kids who leave the church. They will not find jobs satisfying. I'm sure you've seen this 100 times. All 10 will struggle with balance in family and work. Well, see, you know this. You have been convinced of it. That's why some of you left jobs. That's why some of you are now bivocational. That's why some of you have stepped out on faith, scared to death. Are we going to eat? How much are we going to eat? How often are we going to eat? I mean, these are the kind of questions you ask when you start talking about support ministry. I understand that, boys. I really, really do. Now, most of you would agree with this statement that in order to make the world right, we need to make churches right. Seen this before? Yeah. Sounds familiar? Yeah, and we get down there and we say, oh yeah, in order to make marriages right, we need to make men right. Because we believe that the spiral starts at the bottom and goes to the top. You've seen it. You've had it in your sessions. You know that this is the way these things work. So, men are key. So, you've been convinced of it. You're now all in with your life. Now, you've found out the bunch I'm going to have to deal with are called pastors. And you're just wondering, why in the world did it fall my lot to have to deal with this bunch? I got a couple of chairs up here if I need to bring some in the back. If you don't mind, take that one back there. Now you're convinced. Now you know. Now is strategy. How can we strategize? So that's really what I want to talk about. You were introduced to the wide, deep continuum, which you are now convinced, and then they showed you this chart. There, you know, they're out there, men who need Christ, cultural Christians, biblical Christians, and leaders. And we've got this long description about what we need to reach these people. And we were given these descriptions. You know, men who need Christ, it's all about me, God and me, all about God, God and you. Great, okay? And these are the kinds of things that we need to do if we want to reach these different groups of men. And you've been taught this. And this has been kind of drilled into you. You are convinced of it and how it actually works. Now, what I want to do is I want to talk about how a church, because I think you may already know this, most of the churches that you're going to be approaching about supporting you in ministry and getting involved in your ministry fit somewhere on that diagram. You got to know. Before you ever approach that church, before you ever say a single word to the pastor or the whoever is the leader of the men's ministry, if it's a mega church, if they have a ministry to men and they have a leader of that church and that's the person to whom you're going to be talking, you've got to do your homework about that church. And there is some critical due diligence that you must do before you ever say anything, because what you say is going to be critical. How you say it. A couple of in the front right here, my brother. Come on now. How you say it. And that, this is really what I want to talk about, because this is something that I, before working with Man in the Mirror and learning, would not have known this and would not have taken it into consideration. And I guarantee you that there are churches that are not supporting me in my ministry because I didn't approach it correct at the beginning. And of course, once that first shot is over, it's a single shot rifle. You don't get no more bullets in that one, boys. So how do we do that? Well, I think it's by understanding what type of church that you're dealing with. And I come to label them, and I talk about these churches in these categories. There are lots of churches out there which are, in fact, churches trying to reach men who need Christ. And today, a lot of those churches, not all, there's no monolithic thing here, but a lot of the churches that are probably most effective in reaching men who need Christ would come under this banner that are called seeker-driven churches. Seeker-driven churches are very much in the vein of the Willow Creek. Their whole service on Sunday morning is totally designed to reach unbelievers. How they do church, what they do, what they say, all the things they don't say, so they don't want to offend anybody, they don't want anybody away, is totally focused on that unbeliever. Now, for years, There were some people who didn't like it. They cussed it. They complained. But the fact of the matter is, it's out there and it is a reality. And you're going to deal with churches which have as their primary focus that they are seeker-driven. They are trying to design their Sunday morning service. All the things they do in their churches are designed to reach unbelievers, and they tend to be very, very wide, not to date. Okay? Now, we're not criticizing. We're not saying that's bad. We're just saying this is the reality of what we got to deal with. How you talk to people in this type of church is very important, because that type of church is very different from a seeker-sensitive church. Now, seeker-sensitive churches tend to deal a lot with these cultural Christians, these people who maybe 3-4 timers a year, or people who come in maybe once a month, drop in for their, you know, their vaccination shot, and then they go back doing what they're doing. Seeker-sensitive churches are not primarily focused on unbelievers. Their service is not totally dedicated to reaching unbelievers and making them feel comfortable and welcome, but they are sensitive to them. And they do try to preach and teach, and they do try to sing and do things that won't make a person who goes to church rarely uncomfortable. Okay, very important to know if that's the type of church that you are dealing with. Then, of course, there is the traditional church. I put biblical Christians, those who are deep in faith, growing, see themselves as have no longer babes in Christ. I put them under the title traditional. Now, you understand, traditional is wide. I mean, there's a lot of traditions out there, denominational churches, all kinds of flares and flavors. And you also know that even among denominational churches, some of them can be seeker-driven, seeker-sensitive, and they can, of course, be true. So you got to understand, the image that I kind of have in mind is really the Bible church, the Bible church movement. I mean, they start with verse 1 of a book, and they go all the way to the end of it. I don't care if it's 90 chapters. Okay, it's 5 years later, he's just getting through the end of the chapter. Okay, these guys believe in the Bible, ain't nothing else but the Bible. They don't teach nothing else around here but the Bible. Okay, and nobody in that church has seen a Reader's Digest in years. They don't believe it. So, now, very traditional churches, okay? And then you got to know, if that's the kind of church you're dealing with, that you're going to be talking to, you got to know that. Because they are a totally different animal from these others. Okay, so when you walk into this church, if you don't know this philosophy, that it is what guides what they do, then you're probably going to make a mistake. Just in terms of selling ministry to men. I'm part of Man in the Mirror. This is what our mission is. And I'm a regional guy for them. I've been given this area. You fall under my area, and I'm here to let you know a little bit about who we are and what we do, in the hope that you'll come alongside and become a partner with us in this totally worthy goal of reaching and transforming this community for Jesus Christ. I mean, isn't that compelling? I mean, wow. Who wouldn't want to do that? Now, the minute you said partner with, every fiber in his body just exploded. Because see, to him, that word partner means something totally different. It's already loaded. It's already got a lot of baggage with that. And most good pastors automatically go straight to budget. Partner means straight to budget. See, so, understanding that, you probably don't want to use that word until late in the discussion, okay? Not one of those words you want to use. Okay, now, I have had a chance to work with each one of these kinds of churches. Of course, I spent a lot of time over here in my life as a graduate of Dallas Seminary, because we didn't think there was anything else but, you know, overhead projector with, floppies. You didn't have your sermon outlined on clear tape and presented on overhead You just weren't from God. You really weren't serious about ministry. Okay? But as I grew up and got wiser, I realized that God has different kinds of churches because he has different kinds of things that he wants to do. And as I told the guys in the last session, I am just blown away that in 2016, we can still wait for sinners to come to church. That is just incredible. And they'll come. Every pastor in here, how many pastors do I have in here? I mean, you guys are all getting ready right now. You're getting ready right now for that big one. Because you got two big, big ones. And one of them is coming up at the end of this month, next month. That's the big one. It's Easter. Which makes absolutely no sense to me that a sinner would go to church on Easter. Of all the Sundays to go to church, Easter makes no sense to me. Because that's the only day that really says what we're saying is true. And if what we're saying is true, you just came and confirmed it, that you're not going to be able to say, I didn't know. You were here. Tell you what, God, I didn't know. I saw you at Christmas and Easter. You went every year. You in a whole lot of trouble, buddy, because I'm always amazed at people. But anyway, people, they still will come, and well, praise the Lord, we'll take them, and we are here. So you're doing that because you believe that this is going to be a major opportunity. Now, I guarantee you, if you had the opportunity to visit these three kinds of churches on Easter, you would see three entirely different kind of services that they're going to have. Because they're going to do, all of them going to do church, but it's going to be very, very different. You can go to a church on this day, the service may be an hour and a half long, he's going to present the gospel, that's going to be an opportunity to respond. You go to this church right here, this is going to probably be about 45 minute service. You may not know what to do if it's true. As not a Christian, they invitation, walk the aisle, not going to happen. It probably won't even be an invitation given. Here, you're not going to invitation. You may get an opportunity to join in on some kind of class that may follow this up. Maybe if you're here today and you're really interested in this thing about whether Jesus is really real or not. Did he really rise? Is there really any historical proof that he actually rose from the dead? Well, we're actually going to be doing a special class on a Monday night for the next couple of weeks that's going to look at what are the historical verifiable facts that Jesus Christ actually rose from the dead. Is there any? And if so, where is it? Well, see, that's all he's got. That's it. Guys over here, that invitation could get... It could be 20 minutes. I know you're here, and I know you want to come, but I know you're scared. We're not going to rush this thing, because this is the most important decision you may ever make in your life. And as the choir sings softly, and as the piano plays. Hey, Doc, that thing be right now. See, if I was at my church back in Arkansas, we wouldn't even be in a hurry to get out of there. Easter Sunday, it'd be 2.5 hours a week. And then we have an evening service, so we ain't bothered. So that's just different kind of people, okay? It is what it is. So knowing the distinctive difference will help you, I believe, to craft, and I do say craft, because your elevator speech, and you should have one, it should be well crafted, should be well practiced. That when you walk in there and start talking to whoever that person is, if it's the pastor or men's ministry leader, you need to look at it like you got an elevator speech that you're going to get to give. Now, how long is an elevator speech?
3 minutes.
Well, yeah, about 30 seconds. Because you're going to sell him really in about 30 seconds. Now, you may end up having 30 minutes with him. But you either sold him or didn't sell him in some kind of little window that you were in where you hit the right hot button that actually is the very thing that razzes his berry. Otherwise, you just spent 30 minutes that you'll never get back for all of eternity. Very nice guy, but he was never in. He was never convinced because you didn't pray about it. So a lot of prayer. Definitely need the Holy Spirit. And you need to do your homework, do your due diligence, and practice that elevator speech. I would never go in and talk to somebody and hadn't practiced what I was going to say. I would never leave it to chance. I mean, it may not work. I may not be successful, but it wasn't because I didn't put in my work. I put it in. I did what I was supposed to do. I went in, and I tried to give it my best shot. Depending on the Spirit of God, depending on the power of God, because it's not about flesh, it's about spirit. But I believe that we got to be the best we can be in the hope that the Spirit will take whatever we have and make up for the weakness. Yes?
It looks like we have to have our elevator speech should be crafted.
Exactly. For knowing who you're dealing with. It's exactly right. So you got to do your due diligence. Don't walk into a church and not know what's going on in that church. That means you're probably going to have to go there for a service or two. It means you need to smell around, ask some questions, pick up all the literature you can get on that church before you go up and say anything. Because it would be very nice if you know the purpose statement of that church. Say, Pastor, I happen to notice in your literature that the purpose of this church is to... Wow, why? Where'd you get that from? Well, I found that in your literature on your table out there. I just wanted to kind of impress you with what we're doing, because I think that we can come up under you and help you explode that purpose in a greater way in this church right here. Now you've told him, this is not an off-the-cuff. I've been getting ready to meet you a long time, Pastor. I just want to show you what I know about you and what I think I can do for you out of what I know. You would never go into a business meeting without knowing that. See, you never go in to buy something from a guy without knowing what he sells, how good he's at selling it, who he's selling it to, what his follow-up is, what his support. In business, you never do that. But in ministry, hey, it's all in the power of God anyway, and you know, we just need to be faithful to Jesus. Well, you can be faithful, but you ought to be good. Okay, yeah, right. There's nothing wrong with doing a little homework there, buddy boys. Let me tell you, there's just nothing wrong with that. Now, you know, in the diagram, you create value. What kind of man is pastor of this church ought to be a critical question that you ask. Because you're going to create value for him, for the pastor. Now, I believe that a seeker-driven church 75-80% of the time is going to be pastored by a seeker man. He himself is a seeker. He's usually going to be maybe one or two steps ahead of the people he's trying to reach. Yeah. He is not going to be a Dallas Seminary PhD trained guy. I guarantee you. Now, he may have a PhD in psychology from Joe Blow, but he's not going to be seminary deep theology trained guy. Now, there may be a few of them out there, but I haven't met one yet. Okay? Seeker sensitive guy, he's going to be very sensitive, very, very open, very cultured. He ain't been long come out of that cultural world himself. Probably was a businessman, probably involved, you know. Tradition church, seminary trained, probably know either Greek or Hebrew or both. Reference them often, which I've never figured out. No, in the Greek it says, no kidding. Can't wait to get home to get that Greek. What will be valuable to him? So if you're a pastor and you're pastoring a seeker-driven church, what's really valuable to you? What really gets you excited about what you're doing? That's a critical question that you need to ask, because you're going to try to create, you're going to take man in the mirror and try to create it in a way that has value for him and what he's doing. Otherwise, you may miss the mark. So, if we're going to do that, we're going to create some value by first of all knowing what type of pastor we're dealing with, what type of pastor is pastoring this church, or what type of men's ministry leader is in this church. Is he a guy that came out of the business world? Is he still in the business world? Is he just leading the men's ministry? Is he a professional, trained Bible seminary guy who is leading the ministry to men in this church? Is it just a layman? Knowing where this guy comes from and what his background is going to be real critical for how you talk to that guy. And, of course, always start with felt needs. Always. What kind of felt needs does the pastor have? Usually alone, frightened every day deciding whether he's going to be pastor or not. Most of you guys don't know, but most pastors quit. However many years he's been pastor of the church, that's the number of times every year he quits. He's been there 20 years, he probably quits about 20 times a year. I'm leaving, I'm out of here, honey, I don't know. He don't have to tell nobody. But he's constantly frustrated. Just frustrated to no end. It doesn't matter what size it is. It doesn't matter how successful it is. The more successful it is, the more frustrated it is. Because once you get a certain height, you got to keep going. Because once you get a certain height, going down gets a lot easier. Things fall faster the higher they get. So it's a struggle for him, and you need to know that, okay? You got to sell to his dream. He has a dream for that church. He works every day on it. He's passionate. He's committed. He's given his all for it. And if you're going in, you're going to have to sell to his dream. And I think this is just so important. But I have this as a PowerPoint. I'll give it to you if you think it would be of some value to you. I believe you got to give pastors what they need in the context of what they want. Heard that before? It works for every group. It's the same. It doesn't change. Pastor, you know, he knows what he wants. He's struggling with how to get there. He's always trying to figure out some new seminar, some new book. He reads all the time. He's constantly searching and hoping to find that one piece that's going to be so critical and so essential in getting him to where he wants to get to. So let's take some concepts and work the philosophy. Okay? The word discipleship, critical of what you're doing. Okay? You take these three types of churches. The question is, now when you say that word discipleship, what does he hear you saying by that word? Because it is not the same. You're going to have to know now that the minute you say that word, he hears something totally different than what you are saying. You're going to have to define, and you want to define it, in terms of who you're talking to. For example, I am convinced that when you talk to a seeker-driven church and you say discipleship, he really hears evangelism. Because that's really where his world is. He actually disciples unbelievers into Christianity. That's what he does on Sunday morning. You may go there for 3 months before you ever hear of what it is that you need to do to really get in to this thing. When I first started teaching at the Moody Bible Institute, I got there in 86. Willow Creek was just a couple of years old. They had built this big church right out in the middle of a cornfield. In fact, you had to drive through cornfields, no roads. There were dirt roads through the cornfields to get to the church. It was totally surrounded by cornfields. There were not very many houses out there, nothing. And I started going because it was the big, most safe thing going. So I want to know what's going on. So I'm going every Sunday. I went to Willow Creek. And I heard Bill Hybels preach every Sunday. 55-minute service, very short. Usually there was a song, very, very easy, everybody knew, easy to sing, always in the right key, so no one have trouble singing, well known, nothing that nobody would not know, because we didn't want to embarrass anybody or make anybody feel uncomfortable singing a song nobody knows. Okay? There was always a skit, transforming stage, skit, Hybels comes out, did his thing, offering, hey. It blew me away. Because, see, I started preaching as a Baptist. Born a Baptist. Raised Baptist. Baptized Baptist. Going to sing in a Baptist choir in heaven. I'm going to sit in the Baptist section because everybody knows it's going to be right up at the front. So, man, I went to Willow Creek and the pastor got up and said, listen, if you're here today and you are a visitor, we're going to take an offering and it's not for you. You do not have to give in this. In fact, your being here is our gift today. What? You got an opportunity to take an offering with a house full and you're going to tell folk they don't have to give? Oh, God, how can this place succeed? I don't believe it. People just passed it right on by. Never paid attention. Because it was about evangelism. They were doing evangelism. You could go to that church for 3 months and never know what you were supposed to do to respond. Because he would never say, well, you know, do you want to trust Christ as your Savior? Would you like to believe? He didn't do it. Wasn't what they were about. People got saved, though. It's amazing because a lot of people got saved. There is no church in Chicago area. There is no church in the Chicago area that does not have people in it that were not saved at Wolf Creek. I don't believe that's a one. Well, they were effective in evangelism there, but if you'd almost have to ask, well, what do y'all have to do around here to give some money? And ain't nothing more deathly to the heart of a good preacher in my book. Folk having to ask about how to give. Oh, no. You just need to understand, these people are into evangelism. Everything they do is evangelism. It's shaped to try to introduce people to the gospel. And when you say discipleship, that's what he's thinking is discipleship. Evangelism. How can we be more effective in reaching men with the message of Jesus Christ? That usually is not what you mean by discipleship. You're meaning discipleship for really people who are already saved. People who already have come to faith, now who need to be matured or grown in their faith. That is not what he understands by that word discipleship. You need to know that. Now, for a church that is seeker sensitive, you come in and start talking about discipleship, he's thinking that's short-term study or some kind of class. He's thinking about having some kind of follow-up. That means after we have this event, there's going to be a chance for people to be followed up, to be discipled, taught something about Jesus, given an opportunity to know a little bit more about this Christian life. It most certainly does not mean a one-year class on the symbolical significance of the temple in Ezekiel. That ain't what he means. Discipleship means usually going to be some kind of short-term study, some kind of class that you can come, very short, very non-threatening, opportunity for you to grow, to develop your finances, or develop your marriage, or develop your kids, or to develop something else. He thinks very differently about that word discipleship, which is totally different from the traditional church. When you say discipleship to them, you're talking about long-term commitment. You're talking about getting people into church and discipling and training them so that they become reproducers. Meaning that they got to have a class on doctrine, they got to have a class on the church, they got to have a class on sanctification, you got about 15, 20 classes you're going to have to take before you receive your certificate of a disciple of Jesus Christ. Totally different. See, these three have totally different ideas about what that word means. And when you come in, you got to make sure you're defining this word in light of who you're talking to. Because that's going to be a key. It's going to be critical. There's going to be some success to what you're talking about if you're hitting buttons that this guy's really into. So what are we talking about? Well, we're talking about reaching new guys in your community and drawing them in and graduating them into a further walk with Jesus Christ. Evangelism first. Yeah, we're excited about evangelism. That's what we do. We evangelize around here. Now, what happened to them after that? Hey, that's for the church down the road. We're going to send them down the road. Take the phrase ministry to men. Now, when you start talking about ministry to men, what does that pastor hear you saying? Well, I believe a seeker-driven search, when you say ministry to men, he's thinking in terms of Sunday morning. Because everything they do, for the most part, is connected to Sunday morning. A ministry to men, in his mind, most likely, is some kind of sermon series. Some kind of short 3-4 week teaching that he's going to do about what it means to be a man, or a man, you know, becoming more of a man, whatever it is you want to do. It's only going to happen on Sunday morning. There's not going to be anything else going on in church. So when you say ministry to men, he's not thinking of a whole full-blown outgrowing ministry happening in that church. Maybe a small group, if they have small groups. But certainly not a holistic, cross-the-board, every man in the church being affected. Not in his mind, because he's not convinced that probably half of the people coming are even, may not even be believers yet. So he won't think that, he won't give that term that kind of full definition of meaning. Now, if you're talking to a church that is seeker sensitive, ministry to men most likely means a special event. It means a barbecue. It means, you know, Super Bowl party. Softball team, maybe. He's thinking about some kind of special event where you're going to try to get men to come to something so that they'll have a chance to have some kind of relationship development with that fellow. So you come in and tell him, well, we're talking about ministry to men. He's thinking, okay, now what kind of events do you have that will give us an opportunity to make contact with these cultural Christians running loose in our community? Totally opposite would be... would be the ministry to men, some kind of retreat, Bible study, where we're going to try to get them to become more faithful in their fellowship of Christ, growing up so they can become deacons, elders, Sunday school teachers. Well, they start doing ministry instead of just receiving ministry. Discipleship, ministry to men, always in terms of the impact and the fullest possible exploration of this term. So using those kinds of key terms, you got to know that you got to define those terms differently for the guy that you're talking to. To me, it's the difference between whether you're going to be successful or not. Now, what does that mean? You go to church and you start talking about ministry support. Because that really is ultimately why you're there. I mean, you are really talking about ministry support in terms of your life, what you're doing. I mean, you've been given a region, got 60, 80, 100 churches in it. You're supposed to build an effective ministry to men in that area. Question. What are you going to have? Ministry support. Now, what does that mean when you say that to a guy who has a church that's totally built on reaching underbelievers? See, for him, it means an underwriter. See, everything is about underwriting for him. How am I going to finance whatever I'm doing? It definitely does not mean offerings. Because they don't take offerings around here. And if they do, they're certainly not going to get up on Sunday morning and you're not going to get a chance to stand before that church and talk about being supported in men's ministry. It ain't going to happen. They don't do that. The way they do special projects, of which you are asking to become one, is they find underwriters. Someone in the church who has bankrolled who'd be willing to come underneath this program that they've got, which you are asking to become a new one. Potential for success depends on how many underwriters you have. How many people? You go into these kind of churches, there's always one, two, three families in there that's got a lot of money. And they're usually the ones who are coming up underneath most of these major projects that they're doing. The buildings, ministry, salary. I mean, he's giving a lot of money for that kind of thing. You're not that many. So when you come in and start talking about ministry support, first thing he's thinking about is, now, do I want to ask one of my deep pockets to get behind you for what you're doing? Do I want to take that on as a new obligation for this ministry? Now, seeker sensitive, I believe when you say ministry support, they think fundraiser. Meaning that we're going to raise funds for this project. You are a project. How are we going to raise money for it? Because everything they do, see, they have fundraisers. Car washes, weenie roasts, they're selling raffles. They got to have some kind of thing. They're going to raise some money, and they're going to raise a certain amount of money for that. It's in the budget. The money's already raised. Go do it. Otherwise, no. You're not going to get a chance to stand up in that church on Sunday morning and make an appeal, trying to find people who will support. Ain't going to happen. See. And of course, you got the good old traditionalists. The minute you say ministry support, he thinks budget item. So it's going to come a line item budget in the budget. Do we have money in there that we can put that as one under that line? Community outreach. It's a line item. They dedicate 10% of their budget to community outreach. Is there any money in that budget? If there's money in there, I think we could probably help you some. No money in there? We don't even have a line item for that. Do I really want to go back to those elders, go back to my deacons and start talking about adding another line item? It depends on what it is. It depends on how you sold it and whether you convinced him of the urgency, importance, and significance of this idea as to whether he's going to be willing to go in and put that in as a line item. Purely. Now, to me, it's not an issue of right or wrong. It's just an issue of how do churches work and how do these pastors work in light of their vision, a mission, or whatever it is they feel like they are committed to. And I dare say, I'm almost willing to bet, that most of you who have had a chance to do this for a while are pretty much able to see how this stuff works. I mean, you probably know it. Maybe you just haven't articulated it quite the same way, but you already know it. You know how hard it is to get in and see him first. And then when you do get in there, you don't have a lot of time. And you got to get right to the point. You can't beat around the bush. And whether you have success or not, sometimes just depending on what day of the week it is, how that last budget meeting went, how that last Sunday service went or whatever, as to whether he's going to be in a good mood or not, what he's heard, who introduced you, and what the purpose of it really is. I believe this is the key to you achieving success if you're going to have success in all the different churches that we're really asking you to deal with in a given region or area. I mean, you got all kinds of denominational churches, all kinds of churches at various levels in their growth experience. It's almost unfair, really. In a way, it's unfair to ask you to have that much diversity that you got to try to deal with and bring harmony and cohesion to this thing. I mean, it really is kind of unfair. Because walking into a Baptist church is a 180-degree opposite of walking into a United Methodist church. They're totally different. How they do things, how much money they got. I haven't been in a United Methodist church that didn't have a lot of money. If there's one around, let me know. Because I want to go see what's going on up in there. There's something happening. I'm sure we got plenty of money. Plenty of money! Then I go to another church, they don't have no money. They never got no money. They always complain. Man, we just ain't got no money. Get them to give. I promised them, I've raffled, we've done a lot of, we still just no success. We still just seem to be struggling up in here and not being able to get it done. Just some idea that I wanted to try to focus with you to see if I could get you to think a little bit more soberly about what it is you're doing and what you need to do in terms of your own due diligence to try to be effective as you're reaching all these pastors with all these outcomes and with all these measurements as you're being to be more effective in what you are trying to do. Questions? Yes, sir.
Kind of a comment, but I have this dream of, you know, sitting down in front of a pastor and the pastor educating you as to what their denomination, their background is, and just giving you the inside rather than you have to try to figure it and sort it out yourself. It may be just a dream. But
well, it is. Now,
just be clear.
It's totally. There'll be no mistake in that. Now, he always going to want to give you his evaluation of the situation. Every pastor just loves that. I mean, somebody's actually going to sit down and listen to me talk for maybe undivided attention, okay? Because he wants something, he'll listen. So, yeah, he always wants to give you that. But you very seldom are you going to have enough time to do that. You just don't have. He's not going to give you that much time. And that really is dependent upon what size his church is. Because the bigger it gets, the less time he has to devote to any one thing. And, you know, if every pastor you walked in to deal with, you could be just guaranteed that you're going to have an hour and a half of his time. to kind of get to know him, he kind of get to know you, to let him kind of talk about whatever it is he want to talk about, and then eventually get to what you're doing. It would be nice if you could be assured that that's going to happen, but most times it's just not. It's just not. And as churches are getting a little more sophisticated, especially the bigger churches, they do have somebody in that church who has been designated as the guy, the go-to guy for their men's ministry. And most likely you're going to be, you know, you're going to be pushed to him. And in that case, you may have a little better chance because he probably is going to want to talk about their men's ministry and what they're doing and, you know, how successful they may or may not have been. And you may get a chance to hear that, where you can then try to be wise enough to insert yourself into his vision as he's presented it in some key component way. There's probably no guaranteed way it's always going to work. You just got to be wise enough and discerning enough to pick up on where you are and what's going on in that church in your due diligence as to how far you're going. I'll go from this side and I'll go that way. So I'll be back to you. Yes, sir.
One of the things that really helped me is number one, taking a long-term approach. And I'm not a big proponent of just having men's breakfast, but that's a great way for the guys to get to know you, but also the pastor, and research their website if they have it, because that'll cut through a lot of red tape and you'll get a better idea of what the church is like.
Yeah. If they got a great website and it's very delineated, man, you ought to chew that up. You ought to know it top to bottom, inside out, round to back. I mean, anywhere you can get information as a source, you want it. And listen to some of his sermons before you go. Try to figure out, you know, what kind of preacher is he? Is he a topical guy, exposition, topical? You know as much as you can know about that church before you get there. Use every source that you can possibly use so that when you go in, you're not talking out of a vacuum. You're talking out of a lot of information. And the more you can say to a guy about what's going on in his church, you know, the better off you are. Because it looked like you really are not just a charlatan, just come in and see what you can pick up right quick. But you really care. I mean, you really do. You've taken the time to get wise enough to be able to talk intelligently enough to me about my church. Most guys are going to be kind of impressed with that. Really. Yes, sir.
Yeah, I work offshore, so I may be saying things that don't fit America. But I found one is we have to sometimes handle misunderstandings or skepticism. Are you going to take my leaders? They'll never ask you that, but we're a parachurch. So we also have to think about, are they skeptical? Do they have misunderstandings? Or what are the drawbacks or whatever that they're going to come up with? And hopefully investigate that beforehand so we have...
So you know.
We know.
Don't walk in there unknown. Yeah, guy, you know what? One of the first things I'd want to find out if I was going to a church to do anything with them about men's ministry, I'd want to know if they had any contact with Promise Keepers and how much. Promise Keepers have done more damage in churches than in anything I know of. They were, wasn't it a great movement? Oh, wow, 60,000. Ooh, wow. Yeah, well, they went, got excited, thought the whole world was going to come to an end. And then 3 months later, you could hardly find anybody. No excitement, no thrill. We spent money on it. We bust them in. I mean, a lot of churches have a very bad taste in their mouth when it comes to Promise Keepers.
Yeah, and you, parachurches in general.
Or just parachurches either. But Promise Keepers has been one that's been really, it did a lot more hurt, I think, than it did good. But we had a great goal. What we wanted to do was great, but we didn't know the distinction between an event and what happens after that event. And men love events. I mean, we just love events. We'll get up for it, man. We'll go sleep on the ground, sleep in tents. It's an event. We love it. But 6 months later, you can hardly find anybody that went or is still excited about it, and they've moved on to something else. It's all gone on. And the guy's left holding the bag. You know, we spent money on it. We got a budget. You know, people said it was going to be great. I mean, my men, some of them that went there, they don't even come to church anymore. Wow. Just know, okay? Just you need to ask some questions. Make sure that there's not some bad feelings in there, hurt over something that happened earlier in a men's ministry. Maybe they started a men's ministry, it ran for about 6 months, and then it died out. Now you can't get anybody excited again about it. All that has to be taken into consideration when you go in there dealing with these different churches. Just know that, okay? Just know that. Not a criticism, it's just a reality. Yes?
As a pastor, what are some of the tips you might be able to give us about developing an authentic relationship with that pastor that would give you more interest?
Yeah. Unfortunately, guys, for 99% of you, you're not big enough for most pastors. You're just not. Now, if you used to be a pastor of a 5,000 member church, Oh yeah, I want to talk to you because I want to try to find out all I can find out of you. What do you used to do? Well, I sold widgets for Widgets Incorporated. And you want what? See, they're not going to give you the time of day because you're not big enough. And I'm not serious. I mean, most pastors only they see themselves as a certain size fish, and they only impress with fish that are bigger. Now you say, well, isn't that fleshly? You ain't seen fleshly until you start dealing with all these pastors. Now, I was one. I've been one 28 years. Listen, I'm just going to be honest with you. So trying to get on that guy and trying to become a friend with him, he needs you. But most likely, he don't have a lot of friends as pastor. He has to kind of keep this. So having a really good relationship with a man who's not in his church, but who cares about him would be, to me, essential to his just good, strong, quality mindset. But he comes at it from day one, very suspicious. What? I mean, why do you want to be friend with me? See, he's very suspicious from day one. I mean, I know you're selling Amway. I just haven't quite figured out how you're planning on getting me into it. And so they're very suspicious, and they've been taught to be, because as a pastor, I tell you, I would get at least, there were times when I would at least get 4 or 5 calls a week from somebody who wanted to meet with me about some project, something in the community, you know, the mayor wants this, somebody wants me to do something. And learning how to say no, which most pastors don't have a real good art at, it may take time, but you got to be committed. You can't give up. I mean, you got to be determined. And the more you know and the more you do, I think the better off you'll be. Yes.
Okay, if I'm not trained up on this, I've done this other. So how do I articulate that we're coming to actually do something versus I need you to do something? I mean, as a lay person in the church.
Yeah. And going to the pastor, if I was a layman in my church and I had something I really felt like the church needed to do, I would never say anything to anybody until I had convinced 4 or 5 other men in that church to come with me on this mission. I'd never go alone. When I meet with him, it's going to be 5 of us sitting there, just as passionate, just as committed. All 5 can talk about it with great detail, because it's just not a selling job that I'm doing here. We're committed and we're already doing it. We just want to know, Pastor, are you going to give us permission to expand this thing to a wider view and church? Because we're already doing it in our lives. Let me show you what's happening in the lives of the 5 men here. See, it's all about how you are accomplishing what you're doing. Never go alone. Mm-hmm. Never.
Awesome.
Yes, sir.
What do you recommend that how we serve pastors then? That's one of our
Yeah, if I were you, and hopefully you raise enough support so that you got time to do these things, just because of the way I work, if I was given 60 churches, see, I would have a chart, and on that chart, I would go from my largest to my smallest church, okay? And then I would try to be strategic about them. And then I would try to find some guys in that church that I could start building a relationship with the guys. And I would start selling this vision that I have. See, I'd probably have a men's group every day at one different church, Monday night, Friday night. Because if you can convince them of what you're doing, they will convince him. You walking in as an outsider, tough. Them on the inside, he's invested. These are my members. I want to keep them. I at least better listen to what they're saying. So a lot of what you're going to have to do is start with the people that you can get to easiest, which usually means men in that church. You can get to them easier than you can the pastor. The pastor is going to be the nut, the crack, and you're going to take a lot of WD-40 for that one. A lot. Yes.
Yeah, on the bigger churches, I found working with the zone pastor and doing a pilot and getting a group of men in that zone or with that zone pastor or whatever gets a lot of traction, because they can see success on a small scale and the risk is reduced, then you can go.
That's exactly right.
Get to the head.
And I know you guys are not going to have, I mean, you have families. You got your wife, your children, but this is really your job now. And so trying to figure out what's going to be best for you in the area that you're in. It may mean that you have to pick one church and build a successful model with that one before it can go somewhere else. You may have to pick four or five different ones. It's going to depend a lot on what kind of grace God gives you in the area where you are. You just have to be wise about it. Yes?
I've been in my own consulting business for 50 years or whatever. But I've there's a basic tenet in working with people, and that basically comes down to there's what we call up-down referrals. And referrals are the most important thing that I've ever done in my business. I do the same discussion plan. Everything comes from referrals. And the big thing we've learned, that I learned in my business, is I got to the, and I'm going to segue into your church, but when I got to the big guy, to say a guy was worth $50 million in my category of the kind of people I work with, that guy's referrals were gold. Because they were normally down referrals. Now, if he referred me to a guy worth $100 million, tough, even tough to get in because I had to deal with a different evil set.
That's exactly right.
Like, who's he referring me? So there had to even be different language getting into that guy.
That's exactly right.
Just in a casual conversation, he said something about you were successful, you know. But with that down referral, I call it. That's why you said something about big churches and small churches. If you can get to the big church first, where you have what I call the key guy in your life, and you only need one, by the way, the Lord brings you, that guy knows these other people. And when you get referred down, you say, you know, I know John over here, he's got this small church, or even if you go to those churches and use the, can I use your name, you know, they want to know how that big church is operating. It's easier to get in, guys. I'm just telling you this as business. I've helped a lot of small business consultants build their practices and raise money and, you know, that whole thing. So just remember that up-down referral concept. And when you're getting a referral from a small church to a big church, you know, I went to school, I went to Dallas Seminary with this guy who's now running a $40 million, you know, type of operation. That guy, you need to have different language to get into him because that guy might have ego. Again, they're still pastors, but they're still got this thing going on.
Exactly right.
You talked about.
That's exactly right. I cannot agree more. You need to give your name and your number to every man in this room. You really do. A guy who's been a consultant knows there are tricks to the trade. I would probably go in. That's why I said I'd have a chart. I'd have the biggest church in my region down to the very smallest one. If I could start with the largest church in there, you will have no problem getting the small guys because they all want to be like him. And if he says so-and-so and so-and-so, or if you go out and raise money to have a breakfast, but you get the guy with the largest church to speak on some aspect of ministry in his church, you're going to get the other guys. They're going to come because they all know him. Everybody knows him. Everybody want to be like him. They may not say it, but they want to. You're going to have an easier time working that flow. So it is a science. Men are men. They all work together. I don't care how holy they say they are. Men work the same. And so principles, good principles, do work. You can be effective. You can be. Yes?
Can you give some strategies and insights on that multi-site? Because I've kind of messed up. I made the assumption that everything comes down to the
multi-site. Yeah. And it may, in some, depending on the pastor. See, there again, it depends a lot on him. What kind of man is he? Is he a micromanager so that everybody, do they tape his sermon and his sermon is played in all the other sites, or do each site has its own pastor and how much authority? I mean, that's part of that due diligence that you have to do to know who you're dealing with in the churches that are in your particular area. So there's no easy question. It's just a matter of you doing some really good homework to know what you're dealing with. And sometimes you make a mistake, you know, and don't worry about it. God has lots of grace in this men's ministry thing. So we need a lot of it, believe me. Yes, ma'am.
I wonder if you had any tips for presenting to a mixed crowd, like a ministerial association or at a conference where there are, you know, just a mixed group of people and might have a table.
Yeah, if I went to a ministerial alliance meeting, I would want to be able to show results for what I do. That's going to be your one opportunity to really give a good shout out for it. This is what I do, and let me show you. If I was going to get a chance to speak to a minister of the Lions and I had a small group that I'd been working with, I'd want to bring that small group. They would be talking about what we do because that's your best opportunity. Ministry of the Lions is filled up with a bunch of men jealous of each other. And when you start talking, each one of them is trying to figure out how he can get the advantage. See, because all of them in the community want to reach the same pot. Okay? This guy over here stole about 15 of my members. I ain't say nothing. I'm not going to say nothing. But I ain't going to forget it either. If you think like they think, and most of you are not pastors, so you don't know, and you, most of you in here want to think high of your pastor. You want to think that he's a godly man. And he is. I'm sure he is more godly than a lot of people you know. But at the end of the day, he still thinks a lot like a man. Okay? And he operates that way. And if you take him like that, that's not me saying that you're being mean or you know, being nice. It's just the reality. We're all human. We all want to grow. We all want to get bigger. We all want to just play for that. I want to tell you one story, and I'll let you go. I once had the opportunity to meet the guy who started the whole coupon booklet business. He's a Jewish man, lives in Philadelphia. I walked into his office. On his wall was a picture of everybody in the world that was significant. Because they all wanted to meet him because he had billions of dollars. Everybody wanted him to support whatever project. And I got a chance to have 30 minutes with this guy. Okay? Now, this is a guy who started coupon booklets, had made billions. And I walked this off. I'm totally overwhelmed. I mean, wow. But I thought about it. I'm only going to have 30 minutes. I'm not going to do no talking at all. Ain't nothing he need to know about me at all. And I finally figured out. I said, you know, I thank you for giving me your time. I know it's important. I don't have long 30 minutes. I just got one question for you. If there was one thing and one thing only that you could tell me, what is it? He kind of thought about it. He said to me, listen, I don't care what it is you're doing. I don't care what it is you want to do. If you're dealing with man, figure out what the greed factor is for the person you're talking to. Because if you can get to whatever it is that he's greedy about, you're not going to have any trouble getting him to do whatever you want to do. So now he's not a believer, because he's Jewish. And that, which is not bad. I don't mean it in a bad way. I'm just saying, if you want to know what, if you want to know how to get something really done, go ask a Jewish person. Okay? Because the Jews are just good at what they do. Okay? God bless them. It's all God's blessing, but I'm concerned. What's he greedy about? If you walk into a church, what's the one thing you know that pastor's greedy about? Growing that church, which means more butts in the pews on Sunday morning. I mean, that's what that is. He'd do anything to get that done. So if you're not helping him figure that thing out, then you're not going to get to him. You're not going to get to talk to him. How can I help that greed that he has to get more people? Now, we don't use that word greed because we say that's a bad word. But in reality, he's greedy for souls. He wants all he can get. He can't get enough. That's what he's after. You help him, he'll make it up. Hey, guys, my email address is N-U-G-U-S-S. Nugus stands for Nubian Princess, which I have one. NUGUSS@gmail.com. If you email me, I will respond to your email. It may take a week, but I will respond. You have a question? Just email me. This man over here, this consultant, I'd be trying to get his email because I'd have some questions for him. He'd probably go back to being a consultant. By the way, when someone blesses you, always bless them. You'd be surprised what a little $10 gift certificate will do for somebody who gave you a critical point and tip. Now, I'm not saying that for me. I'm just telling you for people that down your line. Just, you know, a little blessing goes a long way in telling people thank you. Okay? Remember that. Hey, God bless you. Got to go. We're over time. Thank you, man.